back to Red Ice Radio. Wonderful to have you back with us. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and you are listening to Internet Talk Radio, recorded from the west coast of Sweden. Our website is redicecreations.com, where you can find more information about our radio program, follow along in our frequently updated news, and get access to our member section. As you might have noticed, we've taken a few days off for some filming abroad, but we're back in full force, and we are going to kick things off with our guest Russ Baker. He is the author of Family of Secrets, the Bush Dynasty, the powerful forces that put it in the White House, and what their influences mean for America. So this is going to be all about the Bush family dynasty, as it were. I can also mention that Russ is an award-winning investigative reporter with a track record for making sense of complex and little understood matters. He has written for The New Yorker, Vanity Fair, The Nation, the New York Times, The Washington Post, The Village Voice, and Esquire. And he has also served as a contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review. And Baker reviewed a 2005 Deadline Club Award for his exclusive reporting on George W. Bush's military record. That's an interesting note that we might talk a little bit more about later on in the program. There's a few websites for you to take a look at here to follow along in during our program. Familyofsecrets.com, it's the main website for the book. And Russ is also the founder of whowhatwhy.com. That's a non-profit investigative reporting site with a lot of interesting information. We might, if there's time, talk a little bit about that as well here later in the program. So with that, welcome to Red Ice Radio, Russ. It's good to have you with us today.
Thank you very much, Hendrik.
Thank you again for coming on. We appreciate your time. Tell us a little bit about the book Family of Secrets and why you decided to dig into the Bush family dynasty, Russ.
Well, I began my research about 5 years ago, back when there seemed to be, at that time, a better reason to understand a little bit more about particularly George W. Bush. I had been living abroad, been asked to go and train journalists in investigative reporting in the former Yugoslavia, investigative reporting, I think, being a crucial component of any democratic system. And so I had been there in 2003 at the time of the invasion of Iraq, and had been writing about that. As I traveled there and around Europe, people began asking me what was going on in the United States and how to account for this sort of remarkable turn of events, and also wanted to know more about Bush. They wanted to know why Americans had elected him. It became clear to me that I really didn't know my country anymore, and that as a reporter, kind of, I almost had felt an obligation to get back home and do some more digging myself. And so I returned in early 2004 while Bush was running for re-election. It was becoming increasingly evident that they had essentially prosecuted the war with Iraq under false circumstances, and that there were a lot of secrets to this administration. So I sort of just began in 2004 kind of looking into some things about George W. Bush. One of the things that was interesting to me was that here was a man who had started a purely elective and entirely unnecessary war, and was sending thousands, well, not only American troops, but particularly members of the National Guard. These are people who usually serve in their state, and they typically are involved in keeping order domestically and helping in situations like natural disasters. But here he had sent all of these people over to Iraq. A lot of them were being injured or killed, and the guards people told us that they had been improperly trained. And then there was George Bush himself, and there were stories that he had not finished his National Guard service when he was in there instead of going to Vietnam during the Vietnam War. So I was interested in this. I was interested in the challenge with John Kerry and the fact that Kerry was under a scrutiny by the Bush people for his role, even though it was clear Kerry had not only served but had gone to Vietnam and had been in a very dangerous situation. So I began looking at Bush, trying to understand who he was, how he had come to be on the way to re-election despite all these controversies. And the result of that was about 6 months of research, including some articles I did for The Nation magazine, where I established that, in fact, he had not finished his military service, that there were 2 years missing. And I thought this was very, very interesting. How had this man been able to just skip out on 2 years of military service? Why was the media not managing to get to the bottom of it? And what was the story behind that? And so that was my work in 2004. And I found many, many other interesting things that made it clear to me that we didn't know much of anything about George Bush and about his family. And the result of that then was that in early 2005, I began research on a book. My simple question was, how was it that this improbable man had become the most powerful person in the world? And that was the opening point for Family of Secrets.
I want to backtrack just a little bit. You talked about the U.S. involvement and in a way, invasion in regards to Yugoslavia, the old country and the Balkan Wars, as it were. But that was under Clinton, wasn't it?
Right. No, I was talking about the Iraq invasion. I was in the former Yugoslavia working with journalists, but I wasn't conflating the two issues.
Oh, okay. There you go. How about Iraq then, if we talk a little bit about that? What do you think is the, this has been debated back and forth, of course, what the true reasons was for the invasion of Iraq. What's your take on that today, Russ?
Well, one of the many revelations in Family of Secrets is that I have the answer to that question for the first time ever from the lips of George W. Bush himself. And maybe we can get to that as we move through the sort of Bush family story. I don't want to take it out of sequence, but I do have directly from a man who worked with George W. Bush, who told me what George W. Bush told him about why he invaded Iraq.
Okay, well, let's return to that a little bit later then. Maybe we can begin. I asked you a little bit before we began the program here about in regards to Prescott Bush, the father of George Herbert Walker Bush. Is that where you think the dynasty, so to speak, begins? Is this a stage where they become powerful, or have you tied this more in regards to Bush 41, the 41st president, Russ?
Well, just to contextualize that, I would say this. What I learned in my 5 years of research for Family of Secrets was that the Bush family needs to be understood not so much just as a dynasty, but as a function of the system of power in America. And it turned out, I began to see that the Bushes were basically enablers and facilitators of much more powerful, much more wealthy people and interests than themselves. And in fact, this goes back George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Prescott Bush, Prescott's father, Samuel Bush, even Samuel's father, James Bush, who was a minister to very, very wealthy congregations on the East Coast and in San Francisco, all the way back to the height of the gold rush. So there's a very interesting story there of wealth and power in America.
And who would you say is behind the wealth of Bush? Is it does it go back to the powerful bankers again, or is there another agenda for why someone else wanted to put the Bushes to power? What do you think?
Well, the answer to that, if I may, is a long one. Basically, let me contextualize that, because I think what's important here is for your listeners to understand that I am a classic investigative journalist. I'm not essentially a polemicist. I don't begin anything that I do with a preconceived notion, with a theory or anything. I simply go in with a question, and I'm willing to let the information go wherever it goes.
Right.
I think that's the best kind of journalism to do, the best kind of writing to do. And so because I didn't know the answer to what you're asking me, I want to tell you how I found the answer.
Right. Go ahead.
What I did was I wanted to know, as I said, here was this very improbable individual, George W. Bush, becoming the most powerful person in the world, despite a very severe set of limitations, a lack of qualifications, a lack of experience, a lack of vision, a lack of a lot of the verbal gifts that you would identify with a statesman and a leader. And so I wanted to know how he had come to power. And I began looking at the relationship between him and his father. Because it was very clear to me that if his father, who had the same name, George Bush, had not been president of the United States, his son never would have been elected, would have never been elected even governor of Texas or anything for that matter. And so I began trying to understand that. And the first thing I noticed was that as I traveled around the country asking people to explain George W. Bush, they almost never talked about the father. And wherever I read about them, it was always how the father was so different from the son. The father was more careful, more restrained, had a different set of values, much more moderate, and that there had been a kind of a rift, a competitiveness, and a falling out between them. And what I discovered was quite the opposite, that actually George W. Bush had always been very, very close with his father. He'd been a lieutenant to his father. He'd been involved as a key strategist and an aide to his father through several decades. And that even though they had a different style, they really shared the deepest values. And I found that, in fact, when George W. Bush had a secret or was hiding something or had a problem, that I would see the mark of his father's hand behind this, but in a very, very secretive way. And so I was fascinated by this gap between the perception of their relationship and the reality I was finding. And this forced me to look more closely at the father, George H.W. Bush, or as I refer to him in the book, I call him Poppy Bush usually because that was his family nickname, and I called the son W, and I'll do that on this program. It's easier for listeners than
right.
keep repeating George and George. So what I discovered was this. Poppy Bush himself had an improbable rise. He really was not a particularly skilled public politician. He didn't really have a lot of gifts or experience in any key areas, but he was just this relentless survivor and climber. And later on, we can talk about what I discovered about his relationship with Richard Nixon that fostered his rise. But in any case, prior to that, I go all the way back, and I see that the father, Poppy Bush, he'd been the CIA director, as you may know,
in
1976. And of course, this is known by the public, but what they don't realize is that he had a secret life. And this secret life was something I discovered in the course of doing the research for Family of Secrets. One of the things that struck me in looking back at the father's history, and the grandfather for that matter I can talk about, was that, first of all, the grandfather, it turns out that when he was in the U.S. Senate, one of the things that he did was he was involved in overseeing the covert activities of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that's interesting. I wonder why a banker would be doing that. And what I learned was that Prescott Bush, his investment banking firm, Brown Brothers Harriman, was an enormously powerful outfit where partners had influence with American presidents of both parties for much of the 20th century. I also found that Prescott Bush's, one of his partners, Robert Lovett, was essentially the father of the CIA, that he wrote the blueprint for the creation of the CIA when it was created in 1947. And I thought this was very, very interesting. Then I see Prescott Bush involved to the extent where, as I described in Family of Secrets, he actually goes to Hong Kong in the 1950s to find out what went wrong with a covert operation that was intended to assassinate the Chinese leader Zhou Enlai. Through the poisoning of his rice bowl at a banquet. And I thought, well, this is interesting. He's not just an investment banker. He and his partner is the guy who founded the CIA. There's something else going on here. So I became very interested in the whole family. I then began looking at George H.W. Bush, or Poppy, and I was interested. Of course, the story is that he was, after World War II, he set out on his own in the oil business, built up a company, and then ran for Congress, got elected to that, and then became UN ambassador and so on. Well, what I found was very interesting to me was that I obtained a declassified memo that shows that in 1953, when Poppy Bush set up a company called Zapata Offshore, a drilling company that was quite tiny, had very few employees, had just a handful of drilling rigs that they would basically lease out to oil companies, that he was traveling all over the world to places where there was no drilling going on, there was no probability of drilling going on. Just too much travel for a tiny company like that. And I thought, well, that's strange. That's almost like he's really doing something else.
Yeah.
Then I found a memo from the CIA revealing that when he started his offshore drilling company, he did it with a man named Thomas Devine, who, according to this memo, was a CIA officer who had, quote unquote, retired from the CIA to go into the oil business with Poppy Bush. And I thought this was interesting because Mr. Devine was under 30 years of age, had just recently received extensive training on the taxpayer rolls, and I thought this was highly improbable. And the more I looked at the company, the more it became clear to me that this was not a normal company, and that it was doing something that looked very much, had all the hallmarks of being basically an intelligence operation. And when I saw that they had a rig that they put just right off of Cuba prior to the Bay of Pigs invasion, I said, there's definitely something else going on here. Then I discovered that he had stated that he could not remember where he was. This is Poppy Bush, November 22, 1963, the day that John F. Kennedy was assassinated. And that just stunned me.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay, so it's definitely something different going on here than in regards to Zapata Offshore and all this. And but even if we backtrack a little bit further and talk about Prescott Bush again, and wasn't he even, he's been accused of dealing with the Nazis, isn't that right?
Yes, I mean, I find some of the statements on that a bit imprecise. I spent a fair amount of time in the National Archives looking at what documentation exists on that. I mean, I think the issue there is this. There is no question that their investment banking firm was doing extensive business with German interests in the 1920s and 1930s prior to the rise of Hitler, and that when Hitler was on his way up and when he came to power, that they continued to deal with these German financiers who were in fact aiding Hitler's rise, and that they ended up providing a sort of cover for them when it became impossible for these German financiers to get their money out of Germany. And so you see Brown Brothers Harriman creating this sort of front company with Prescott Bush on the board, where they're essentially handling these German investments. There were investigations by the United States Senate with regard to trading with the enemy, and it was pretty clear that that the firm was perfectly happy to continue to deal with those interests, despite what was already clear about the events in Germany. So yes, there is certainly an important story there.
So how did Poppy Bush, and I want to ask you a little bit later how he got that name, of course, but how did he end up as the head of the CIA then, if he kind of came out of nowhere?
Well, what I reveal for the first time ever in Family of Secrets, this is not in any other book, it's not in any other form, is that I, through my research, I came to the conclusion that when he became CIA director in 1976, something that sort of surprised everyone, and you can look back at the old clippings of the New York Times and Washington Post where they say, oh, it's an unusual choice, he has no experience, and so on. In fact, he did have experience, and that what I lay out in Family of Secrets is that George H.W. Bush appears to have had prior involvement with intelligence work before he became CIA director in 1976, going all the way back through the 1960s, even the 1950s with this oil company, and even all the way back to the 1940s when he was a young naval pilot involved with aerial surveillance and intelligence activities in World War II. So my sense is that he had some sort of association with the intelligence apparatus for his entire adult life, which really puts him on a kind of a plane with Vladimir Putin, who became the leader of the of Russia after a lifetime in intelligence services. Except in the case of Putin, we know about it. In the case of Bush, we didn't know about it.
Interesting. And the name Poppy, is that a play in any way in regards to illegal drug trade and heroin? Or where's that coming from?
They called him Poppy or Little Pop because he had the name George Herbert Walker Bush. And his grandfather was George Herbert Walker, because he had a similar name, and I believe also there's some suggestion that he may have even somehow resembled him. Some young relatives of his gave him this nickname.
Okay, so
Poppy meaning pop.
Pop. Okay.
Little pop.
Right, but no. In regards to the drug trade that has been going on.
No. This was a name given by relatives.
Okay. Well, that's
when he was a child.
But is that a track that you've been following in regards to drugs and so forth, in regards to Afghanistan and the poppy fields, all of that, the whole story in regards to how that has increased since the invasion of Iraq and since this has led to the growth in heroin on the black market, as it were. Have you tracked that at all?
You know, there are loads of things out there on the internet on all kinds of subjects, and invariably the Bushes are connected to them. My book is already so explosive that I think I go far enough on what I'm able to document. I have more than 1,000 footnotes, as you will see as the conversation progresses. It's full of things that really are quite shocking. And I go where I'm able to document something. I did not see any documentation of some of the things to which you're referring that are on the internet. I'm not going to come to any kind of conclusions as to their accuracy or not, except to say that I don't have any information in that regard.
All right, right. How about the relationship then with Richard Nixon that you mentioned before?
That's very important. Can we start? Do you mind if we start in 1963 with the Kennedy assassination?
Oh, absolutely. Please go ahead. Yes.
Okay. So I became very interested just to note that Poppy Bush had publicly, when asked, had said, "Gee, you know, I can't remember where I was on November 22, 1963," and I thought, "Well, that's so strange because I just asked random people if they remembered, and anyone who had been over the age of about 4 or 5 years old at the time remembered exactly where they were when they heard about it." And so I thought this was very, very strange, and it sort of resonated with me because he had also claimed that he didn't remember other things, like with the Iran-Contra when he was vice president under Ronald Reagan with the portfolio for covert operations. He said he was out of the loop, meaning he was not informed about this White House-run operation, which basically was untrue. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, when he says he can't remember where he was and there was an important event going on, I want to take a closer look at that. So I began looking at that to understand where he was and what he was doing. And the answer was he was in Texas where Kennedy was killed. He was about 40 years old. And he, like Kennedy, was in politics. He was running for the United States Senate. He was frequently visiting Dallas right around that period. So, you know, certainly he would have known where he was. And I then began learning a little bit more about this. I found that there was a declassified FBI document, which I cite in Family of Secrets, which is a briefing by the FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, and it deals with concerns about whether Cuban exiles in the United States might somehow take Kennedy's assassination as an opportunity to take some sort of action against Castro. And this memo, which was regarding a briefing the day after Kennedy was killed, mentioned that the FBI had consulted with two intelligence officers with other agencies. One of them, named in the memo, was George Bush of the CIA. So according to this memo, George Bush was in the CIA in 1963 at the time that John F. Kennedy was killed. He had some reason to have some sort of involvement or knowledge of the activities of anti-Castro Cubans, who we know also deeply resented John F. Kennedy and how he handled the Bay of Pigs invasion. So I was very, very interested in that because that also, of course, contradicted this claim that he couldn't remember where he was.
Yeah.
Now, Henrik, there's a second very interesting declassified FBI memo. This one is from November 22, the day of the assassination. And according to this memo, George H.W. Bush, and it says oil man, and it gives his home address, called the FBI office in Houston, Texas.
You broke off there a little bit. Go back in and tell us about the second memo.
Right. So the second memo, a completely different one. This is from November 22, the day of the assassination, and it involves a telephone call from George H.W. Bush. It gives his address in Houston, and it says that he's a private citizen, an oil man. And now he's calling the FBI office in Houston, not the office in Dallas where the shooting took place. And he's calling to offer a tip, and he says, you know, I just heard that the president had been shot, and I may have information on who killed him. And, of course, this is extraordinary that, again, this is the same man that we know claims he can't remember where he was. Now a memo has surfaced that he, claiming to be a private citizen, he had called the FBI to say he might have known who did it. And of course, it's the same man who in another memo is involved with something related to these circumstances, but he's a CIA agent. So now we have three sort of different versions of the same person.
Wow.
But in this memo, he gives the name of a man named James Parrott, living in Houston, and he says, I know very little about this man. I've just heard that he was saying things that might indicate that he had some animus for Kennedy, and you might want to look into this. Well, what's interesting about that, and I devoted many, many months to researching this, and there are four chapters in Family of Secrets of all new information on the Kennedy assassination, particularly relating to the Bushes and their sphere. Mm-hmm. And in this chapter, I track that memo, and I discover that, in fact, that phone call was very misleading because he did know who James Parrott was. He knew him personally. James Parrott was a volunteer in his political headquarters in Houston, and he also likely knew that James Parrott was actually no threat at all, and even more astoundingly, at the very moment that Poppy Bush was calling the FBI with this supposed tip, his own assistant was at the home of Mr. Parrott, essentially providing him with an alibi so that after they investigated, he didn't get in any kind of trouble. And so I said, well, this is very strange. What is this? And it starts looking like a very murky and very complicated, multi-layered operation of disinformation. It serves a couple of purposes that I can see. One is it establishes Poppy Bush trying to be helpful with regard to solving the assassination, which again certainly at least shows that he was interested in that. And second of all, he makes a big point of saying that he's calling from Tyler, Texas, a small city, which I think the key emphasis there is that Tyler is somewhere other than Dallas. Mm. And he is making a point that I am calling from Tyler, Texas at about the time that the president is expiring in Dallas in order to be helpful. And I just found this very, very interesting. I might say, by the way, that I am not what you would call a Kennedy assassination buff. I had never really paid a lot of attention to it as a mainstream journalist looking at a lot of different issues. That always just seemed to me to be sort of quicksand that, you know, there's what, probably 1,000 books written on it. People argue forever about it. And I just thought there's no benefit to getting involved in this thing. But I felt I had to. I felt I had a kind of a moral and an intellectual obligation because of these facts I was uncovering about Poppy Bush. And so what you have in Family of Secrets is these four chapters. There's one more element I just want to mention briefly. I discovered that Lee Harvey Oswald, in the year prior to the assassination, had a sort of a helper or a mentor, a man named George Demoranshild, a white Russian emigre with his own intelligence connections. And this man was deeply involved in the lives of Lee and Marina Oswald, even to the extent of he and his wife driving them to dental appointments, finding them apartments and jobs, very, very deeply involved in the year before Oswald supposedly kills Kennedy. Hmm. Now, what was interesting about that was I discovered that George Demoranshild also was a close and longtime friend of Poppy Bush.
Oh my! So, do you think that what does this tell you, that the operations were in some way run by Poppy Bush, or do you suggest that he just were involved in this because it was a CIA plot and he was assigned to executing this order, as it were? What do you think?
You know, this is such a deep and complicated story. The way I handle this in Family of Secrets is I just lay out all of these facts, and I provide, again, the footnotes, and I do offer some informed speculation, but I'm very careful to label it as such. And I say to the readers, you know, kind of join me, take a look at this and see what you think of all of this, because it is very, very complicated. It is a very, obviously, controversial and sensitive material, and I don't want to go even an inch further than I can. What I establish in Family of Secrets, I think, is that the evidence I have uncovered, and there's much, much more than we have time to talk about here, points to the very high likelihood that, in fact, there was an organized plot both to assassinate John F. Kennedy and to cover it up through extremely complicated and sophisticated distracting mechanisms, propaganda and disinformation efforts that started then and have continued to the present day. It astounded me, and I know that a lot of people who read my book, including friends of mine in major news organizations who weren't sure what to think of any of this, have all been persuaded, based on what I've assembled there, that in fact that's correct. There are the hallmarks of elements of the military and the intelligence services of some sort of involvement in this, exactly how this all worked, who the shooters were, What exact role Oswald had in there is something that I don't go and I don't affirmatively say, but it seems clear to me that Oswald himself had some kind of intelligence connections, but that he was what he said when he was arrested, when he said, "I'm a patsy,"
yeah, exactly.
That he had essentially been set up and framed, that he'd been told he was involved in one set of...
Breaks off a little bit. Okay, well, you were just, let's recap a little bit there. You're just telling us Oswald pretty much told that he was a patsy, and what more can you say about that?
Well, I looked into Lee Harvey Oswald's background, and I discovered very clear indications that he had been recruited as a young man in his teens into what you would call sort of paramilitary, kind of quasi-intelligence activities. They seem to have been had a very big recruiting apparatus, and that he was clearly targeted as somebody who was interested and had the sort of psychological makeup of somebody who wanted to be involved in something where there were father figures where he could feel that he was part of some bigger and more noble cause. And I do believe that he was recruited into intelligence work. But my sense is that he was telling the truth when he was arrested and he said, "I am a patsy," that in fact he suddenly realized that he had been framed, that he had been told one set of facts, but they had been intending, at least for, let's say, the final year, to characterize him as doing something entirely different.
Interesting. And in regards to these classified memos, again, that you mentioned, when you read this and when you go through this material, do you feel in any regard that Poppy Bush is using the CIA to propel his own agenda, or is he going on the orders by the CIA? Any idea about that?
This is a very complicated subject. It's one I'm still thinking about. It's one I'm still talking about with a lot of very, very smart people. Increasingly, it becomes clear to me that government entities like the CIA, they're very complicated. They're very big. They have a lot of people working there. Many of the people working there are true patriots. They are believers in democracy. They go by the book. But I think that these apparatuses are so secretive and have so many layers and cells, if you will, that it's entirely possible that you could have an establishment like that where only a tiny fraction of the people involved actually know the true purpose or what's really going on. And this goes back...
We just were broken off there. Again, Ross, you were... mentioning this idea here, or talk a little bit about this idea, if Poppy Bush basically is using the CIA to propel his own agenda, or if he's going on someone else's order, and I understand that that's a very complex issue, something that you're looking into, but is there anything more that you want to say about that?
Well, I think it's important to note that President Harry Truman, who signed the legislation that created the CIA, and in fact the national security, sort of modern national security apparatus of the United States, that he later on made a point that he had never understood that there would be this sprawling covert operations, active operations capacity meddling all over the world, that this had been presented to him essentially as a means to inform the President of the United States so that he could make good decisions. And so the CIA is divided into an element that gathers information, an element that analyzes it, and then an element that takes action. And this action element, the very deep covert operations part or clandestine part, is something else entirely, never really authorized or intended. Although I think it was clearly intended by the people who came up with the idea, and this is, again, people like Robert Lovett, the business partner of Prescott Bush. What these people were is they were wealthy bankers who were serving the interests of even wealthier families that have always been sort of dominant to some extent in American politics, sometimes visibly, but often behind the scenes. And so I think when you look at the CIA and you try to understand things like this evidence that there was something afoot in relation to huge national traumas like the Kennedy assassination, it doesn't mean necessarily that the agency was formally and extensively being used. It could have been and must have been something very, very obviously secret. And and known only to a very small number of people. Now, who are those people and what's their agenda? That's hard to say, but I have to believe that it's not the initiative of a Poppy Bush to do anything, but that rather these decisions are being made in concert with other people who are perhaps perceived as having a larger and broader vision and representing these more powerful interests. So I think that, and I make a case in Family of Secrets that the Kennedy assassination was the culmination of anger and frustration on the part of many powerful interests against the Kennedys. You don't need just one reason that somebody is removed, whether it's a John F. Kennedy in the United States or a Mossadegh in Iran or Arbenz in Guatemala. You can have a lot of powerful people who are angry at somebody for a lot of different reasons, and they can have a meeting of minds only that it's time for this person to go. And I think that's probably what happened.
What do you think about other presidents then? Is this agenda continued with them as well? You mentioned, for instance, if we move forward in the timeline a little bit about the Poppy's relationship with Richard Nixon, for example.
Right. Well, the Nixon thing is very interesting also, and that is another area where I devote several chapters in Family of Secrets. I was interested, so we see Poppy Bush seeming to have, according to these memos, some sort of awareness or knowledge of events related to November 22, 1963. We see him involved with a CIA officer starting his offshore drilling company in the 50s. Then we move forward, and in 1966, he's elected to the House of Representatives. And by 1968, Richard Nixon, basically being made the Republican nominee for president, there was a lobbying campaign to make Poppy Bush his vice president. And in Family of Secrets, I document this, all these letters being written by powerful corporations to Nixon saying you should put this guy on your ticket. And I was surprised by that because, you know, basically nobody knew who Bush was back then. And he didn't have the experience or anything to be the vice presidential candidate, and I thought that was so strange. But Nixon did put him on his sort of list of finalists for this and considered him, and then chose not to put him on the ticket. But Nixon then promoted him. He made him the ambassador to the United Nations in 1970 with no qualifications or relevant experience. And in 1973, at the height of the Watergate scandal, when Nixon was getting rid of all kinds of cabinet members, he not only kept Poppy Bush around, but he made him the chairman of the Republican National Committee, the Republican Party, a very important position. So I thought, well, this is extraordinary. Why is Nixon doing all these favors for this improbable elder Bush? And the answer I discovered, again, was something that's missing from all of the history books. I went back and I looked at all the books on Nixon, all the books on Poppy Bush, and I tried to figure out where that relationship got started, and there was no good explanation. But basically, Poppy Bush wasn't even mentioned in most of the books, and even the books on Poppy Bush barely mentioned Nixon. And I thought, well, this is strange. What I discovered in my research was that it was a secret relationship between the Bush family and their banking interest in Richard Nixon, dating all the way back to the 1940s. And what I found was that when Richard Nixon was a young nobody and he was recruited to run for the House of Representatives, the man he ran against was a very powerful force for regulating and reforming banking and finance and Wall Street interests in the United States, and that this man was considered to be a problem by these interests. And so they essentially wanted to remove him from the scene, which they did by running Richard Nixon. And it appears that Richard Nixon then had a sort of an obligation or a debt to the Bush family all the way from the 1940s for that next 20, 30 years where he kept sort of doing the bidding of those interests. And what we see then is him benefiting Poppy Bush, putting Poppy Bush on the fast track that would eventually get him into the presidency. But then something changes. And this thing changes with Watergate. And I wanted to know, what did Poppy Bush do as the Republican National Chairman to help Richard Nixon avoid problems with Watergate? And I could see that he didn't do anything. In fact, I began to see that Poppy Bush had ties to people doing things around Watergate that made life bad for Richard Nixon. And eventually, as I studied that, I got another splash of cold water in my face, just like with the Kennedy thing, where I had always assumed that Richard Nixon was out of control and that he was essentially the bad guy, if you will, of Watergate. What I discovered was that the whole Watergate story had been misunderstood. I listened to, I studied the Nixon tapes, and what I began to discover was that if you look at them carefully, Richard Nixon did not seem to be involved with Watergate. He had no knowledge of the burglary, the famous burglary. That burglary itself was executed in such a way that it was almost certain to be discovered and to blow up. The burglars themselves carried things that could easily be traced back to the Nixon operation. And eventually I came to the conclusion, and your listeners, if they may find this hard to believe, but again, I've got chapters in Family of Secrets and loads of documents, interviews on the record, and footnotes, that what Watergate was it was a domestic coup d'etat, not by Richard Nixon, but against Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
And again, the same interests, oil, finance, the Central Intelligence Agency, the military becoming unhappy with the president, just as they were with John F. Kennedy, had become unhappy with Richard Nixon, that when Nixon became president, he began exhibiting tremendous independence. He started doing all kinds of things that did not please these interests, that alarmed them. And I eventually came to the conclusion that Richard Nixon was essentially framed through a series of things, of which the burglary was only the final one. Poppy Bush, if in fact he was connected with the CIA before, as he appears to have been, it looks like he was also connected with the CIA when he was running the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And we see all the hallmarks of CIA activity with the burglary, with a number of other things, and with people in the White House surrounding Nixon himself. So all the evidence is that CIA operatives essentially were betraying Richard Nixon and forcing him from power.
Hmm. Well, I've heard that before as well, and it's always interesting with these stories when they, in a way, kind of choose to expose a president or a congressman or whatever it might be in regards to, just as you say, that they're actually doing something where they're not following the main agenda, so to speak, and in that way they try to get rid of them or paint them as the black sheep or someone who needs to be taken out and removed. And that's interesting. And do you think that in that regard Nixon actually was trying to do something good, or was he primarily running things on his own and bringing things down with him, so to speak, in regards to America? I mean, he was in during a long period during the Vietnam War, for instance. Do you think that they wanted to get rid of him for those purposes, or why do you think?
Well, it's hard to ascertain if there was a main or a specific reason, and I'm not sure that's even a productive path. In Family of Secrets, both with the Kennedy assassination and the removal of Richard Nixon, I do lay out what are factual examples of areas where powerful interests were upset with these people. With Richard Nixon, there are a number of areas. He was not an enthusiastic backer of things like something we call the oil depletion allowance, which was a major financial boon for oil men. He was reluctant on that front. He actually warned his own top advisors to be wary of the oil interests. He was suspicious of the sugar interests that were still always agitating to go in and take out Fidel Castro to regain the sugar fields in Cuba. His Justice Department was pursuing antitrust activities against non-competitive practices of large corporations. He was assigning legislation that created a very important initiatives that didn't exist before, such as on the environment, clean air, clean water, new protections for workers, labor law. With regard to Vietnam, he inherited that war from a Democratic president, from Johnson. Now, I don't want to in any way defend his strategy,
yeah,
the secret bombing of Cambodia and so on.
Sure.
But he was running two tracks, and it very clearly was his objective to try somehow to get the United States out of there. But it's very important to note that the United States, I think it's something like now 55% of a discretionary spending by the U.S. government is spent on military. This is an enormous, enormous prop for large corporations in America. If suddenly we were to, peace was to reign this would be catastrophic to these financial interests. And so whether it was John F. Kennedy, who we increasingly learn was working to try to end the Cold War, or Richard Nixon, who also, and by the way, it wasn't just Vietnam, Richard Nixon started trying to open the door with China, and he did. He was having very important negotiations with the Soviets to limit strategic weaponry. He was doing all sorts of things. And so while I would not say he was a great liberal hope by any means, he was, by today's standards and by the standards of either of the Bushes or Ronald Reagan, a very moderate man when he finally became president of the United States. Very, very different from the posture he had as a younger politician. And so I think that these interests were surprised and alarmed when he became president. He decided, this is my chance to create my legacy. He and Henry Kissinger began launching these secret back-channel negotiations with America's enemies, cutting out the military, certainly the military contractors. He also was not very well known. He also was fighting with the head of the CIA right from the beginning of his presidency. And I'll go into that in Family of Secrets.
Very, very interesting. And we should soon begin to round things up here for the first hour. And there's obviously much more to say about George Herbert Walker Bush. But people who want to find out more should pick up a copy of your book. But before we take this break, I want to ask you a little bit shortly here about Ronald Reagan. I mean, Poppy never got into office for a second term, but someone kind of suggested that he didn't need that, so to speak, because he pretty much controlled Ronald Reagan as vice president. Anything you can say in regards to that?
Poppy Bush is such a secretive man, and he's so careful to keep his fingerprints off of everything that it's not clear yet exactly what was really going on in the Reagan White House. And I think the books about the Reagan White House are inadequate on that level, because the people who wrote them and even the people they interviewed didn't necessarily know what was really going on. It is clear that Ronald Reagan was a very inattentive man. He was a little bit like George W. Bush in that sense. He really did not have either the mind or the patience or the inclinations to pay attention to policy. On the other hand, you look at people like Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton. They were very intelligent, very interested people who even were accused of sort of micromanaging policy. But Ronald Reagan was quite the opposite. He was perfectly happy, like Dwight Eisenhower, to leave things to others and to go off and do something else. And so in the 1980s, the United States government was deeply involved with unauthorized, illegal covert operations in various places around the world, with Nicaragua, with South America, with Iran, and so forth, with the Saudis, which I talk about in the book. And I think it's clear that a man like Poppy Bush, with his background as a UN ambassador, as director of the CIA, with his longtime secret relationship with the CIA itself, and with these very powerful interests, there's just almost no way that he was not deeply, deeply involved behind the scenes in shaping policy of that sort under Reagan.
Okay, Russ, I do want to continue here, moving forward, as it were, and talk more about George W. Bush, the son here, in our member section, our second hour. But Russ, where can people go if they want to pick up a copy of Family of Secrets?
The Family of Secrets has been out for a number of months now. It still should be available in bookstores in the United States. Right now, it has not been published in any foreign languages yet, although we're certainly interested in talking to foreign publishers. If anyone knows foreign publishers who may like to put this out, they could contact me via our website, familyofsecrets.com. There's a place there where you can send emails. The book is also available online through websites like BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, or whatever your favorite book ordering website might be.
Excellent. So again, the website is familyofsecrets.com, the main website. Briefly, Russ, also tell us about whowhatwhy.com, a very, very interesting website that, did you start this up recently? There's a lot of material on there by now.
Several years ago, we we launched a nonprofit organization because we thought it was essential that this kind of reporting not only be the result in books that take years to do, but that the public be provided with much more of a real-time understanding of what is actually going on in the world, which is very, very different often from what we hear in these sort of daily reports of the traditional media. And so we started this organization. WhoWhatWhy.com is still just in its infancy. Unfortunately, until we raise money from the public, we're not going to be able to do a lot of stories. We have a few investigative stories on the site that have been put up periodically when we had the time. We also have a blog where we do daily postings and we sort of comment on stories that are out there in the media and provide readers a little bit more guidance as to how to sort of maybe think critically about these stories. I encourage people to go to whowhatwhy.com. If you like the idea of what we want to achieve, certainly we welcome donations from the public, and there's a place on there where you can click to donate at the top, and you can put a whatever you want, $20, $30 a month on your credit card, and it does support this sort of probing independent journalism.
Okay, very good. Then that website again is whowhatwhy.com. Do check it out, and the main website is familyofsecrets.com. Stay with us, Russ. We'll take a short break here, and we will be back with hour two for our members. We'll continue talking more about George Bush, or W, in our member section with Russ Baker. Join us at redicecreations.com for more as we talk about the invasion of Iraq, the Saudis, and the ties to the Bin Laden family. We'll talk about Bush's false Christian persona, the Skull and Bones secret societies, Bush's military record, and the role of the mass media and the new media in all of this. So more coming up in hour two for our members after this break.
By the same last name. You know what? China ain't never giving back that goddamn plane. Must got this old nation trained on some kennel ration. Refrain, the same train, full of cocaine, blows the brain. Have you forgotten? I've been through the first term of rotten. The father, the son, and the holy shit, we all in. Don't look at me. I ain't calling for no assassination. I'm just saying, who voted for that asshole of your nation? Deja Bush, crushed by the head rush when I wrote the bum rush. Saw you salute to the then vice pres who did what Reagan said. And then became pres himself, went for Delft, knee deep in his damn self. Stuck in a three-headed bucket, a trilateral Bush shit. Sorry, ain't no better way of putting it. No, you cannot freestyle this, cause your ass still ain't free if I fight for y'all and they get me.
Come on!
How many y'all is coming to get me? None, cause it's easier to forget me. Ain't that a Bush? Son of a Bush is here all up in your zone. You ain't never heard so much soul to the bone, I told y'all when the first Bush was tapping my telephone. Spy versus spy, can't trust them as you salute to the Illuminati. You know what? Take your ass to your 1 millionth party.
Come on!
He's the son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
The son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad. Now here's the pitch. High inside, certified genocide. Ain't that a Bush? Repeat, ain't that a Bush? Out of nowhere, headed to the hothouse. Killed 135 at the last count. Texas bounce, Texas bounce.
Come on.
Cats in a cage, got a ghost of a chance of coming back from your whack. Ass killer machine, son of a Bush, ain't that a son of a Bush? Cats doing bids for the same Bush shit that you did.
The father.
Serial killer kid, serial killer kid, go!
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
The father.
son. The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. The Father. Come on. The Father.
It's a real thing, used to make you swing, used to be your thing. Daddy had you under his wing, son of a bush. Bringing kilos to fill up silos, you probably sniff piles. Got inmates in Texas scrubbing tiles. That shit is wild. That shit is wild. CIA child.
The father?
That shit is wild. CIA child. That shit is wild. CIA child. That shit is wild. CIA child.
He's the son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad.
The son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad. Son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad.
Son of a bad.
He's the son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad.
Son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad man.
Son of a bad man.
He's the son of a bad. He's the son of a bad man. He's the son of a bad. He's the son of a bad man. He's the son of a bad. He's the son of a bad man.
I'm not afraid of you, Mr. Big Bad Wolf. So you better not follow me anymore. And furthermore, don't bother any of my friends in Fairland anymore, because I'll protect them.